This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This BFM Budget 2022 special is brought to you by Ma Sing.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. It's our Friday segment, our Doctor in the House segment, and joining me, my co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. How are you, George?
I'm very good. I guess we're heading towards the end of the year now, right? So everything tends to get busy towards the end of the year. Obviously, everyone is kind of wrapping up a few things. And obviously, there's a very important thing that is happening towards the end of the year.
Yes, it's always around this time that we talk about budgeting for next year. And of course, George, on your segment, we have been spending a lot of time talking about COVID-19. And that is probably going to be a big factor in the upcoming the budget 2022 that's being tabled today. Well, right now, as we speak. But, you know, we will have another show on Monday where we'll be breaking down the health allocations of budget 2022 and we get all the news. But right now, together with our guest, what we want to do, George, is to take a look into what the process of planning for a budget actually looks like. I don't think it's something that many people are familiar with, sort of going behind the scenes a bit, who is involved, how long this planning process takes, and even the nail-biting moments leading up to the actual announcement of the budget.
It's just like, you know, Oscar award, right? What you're awarded. So we're going to ask our guest whether this is a begging bowl or a wishing list, right?
And our guest is YB Dr. Lee Boon Chye. He's, of course, the former Deputy Health Minister in Pakatan Harapan and also the MP for Gopeng. How are you today, YB?
Fine. Yeah, good afternoon, everybody.
Yes. And this is, of course, a pre-recorded segment. We are speaking to Dr. Lee through Zoom. And I think the first question that I have for YB actually is, like George said, it's like the Oscars award ceremony. I think nobody really knows what's coming. From your position sitting in Parliament, what has it been like when budget, you know, it's announced every year? Is it, and especially when you yourself were Deputy Health Minister, was it mostly what you expected or were there always surprises?
You know, of course, every budget announcement is just like Oscar. Until the news is broken out, we wouldn't know who had won the Oscar. But of course, every ministry will have their wish list. And the wish list was prepared not just before the Oscar. It's actually as soon as an Oscar is awarded, the preparation for the next Oscar begins. So of course, we all are usually very excited when the budget is announced.
Okay. And, you know, we want to get some insights from you into, you know, sort of that year-long process, you know, from the moment you hear one budget and you start planning for the next one. But just very quickly, you do at the end of the day represent voters and the people. Why do you want the public to understand how budget allocations for healthcare are made? Why is it important for us to know this? What do you want us to do with this information?
I think we need to have some fundamental change in the way we look at health budget. I think health is always looked at in expenses. I would rather say that, you know, we should look at it as an investment, because without a healthy population, we will not be productive in the first place. So health should be an investment. So the question is, have we had enough investment in health of our population or not? I think you look at percentage of allocation for health sector is always below the norm if you compare to similar country around the world at our level of economic development. So if you compare to other countries, usually it should be about 6 to 7% of the GDP. Of course, in Malaysia, a big portion of the health expenses come from government, but another about 48% or so come from private expenses. So, but overall, we are still hovering at about 4% GDP, which is well below the average of what other countries at our level of economic development. So more needs to be done. And if you want to do it more efficiently, I think the government has to take a leading role. because we know that if we allow the private sector to take over as main provider of healthcare, then the cost will invariably escalate. And at the end, the riot actually suffers. So I think the government must take upon themselves as the responsible agency to provide quality healthcare for everybody.
I mean, Dr. Lee, it really doesn't take a genius to work out that the government invested in health for all these years. I mean, COVID itself exposed this weakness and the void. And of course, you're looking in a macro picture that this is how much a government should spend of it. But when it comes to voters, you know, the micro picture is what they're interested in. So how do we translate that? For example, and all the voters and your constituents in Gopeng, for example, they're interested in allocation specifically for the several diseases, for preventive medicine and all these things. And how is it translated to the overall picture?
I think in my experience, I think in parliament debates and in my role as a deputy health minister before, I think the common appeal from the MPs who represents the riot on the ground are usually more healthcare facilities. Usually there will always be demand for more clinic kesehatan, more hospitals, more services provided for cancer treatment, for heart disease treatment, et cetera, et cetera. So these are the common wishes of the MP which represents the riot. And I believe that the ordinary voters on the ground do wish that the government take a leading role in providing healthcare services through their clinic kesehatan, through the hospital services. And a lot of the time, there was always demand for more services, especially in rural areas. I think these are the areas where I think the government should give special emphasis. Rather than looking at disease, I think as health planner, we look at disease. But as a riot, ordinary citizen, they look at facilities, they look at services, they don't look at diseases. And that's what I think the government should play a role in providing those services and facilities.
That's an interesting view. I mean, why? Because arguably, you know, one could say the government's role needs to be more macro and even at the level of reforming healthcare financing, which is a very, very difficult issue that Malaysia has never really been able to push forward, partly because it's hard for the government to get public support when it comes to wanting to propose something like social, you know, health insurance and that kind of thing. What are your thoughts on that? Like balancing populist move and the necessary longer term reforms?
I think if you look at the current scenario, the dichotomy of healthcare services will stay, meaning that there will be always a private sector, there will be a public sector. I think that one is going to stay. That's because we respect choice of the riot. So the dichotomy will stay. If the dichotomy were to stay, then how do we implement, say, social health insurance for all? I think that will be a time where a transition has to happen. But I don't see that in the near future. I think at the moment, the priority of the country is how to recover from the COVID pandemic, how to recover economically as a result of the recession brought on by the pandemic. I think that should be a priority in the short term. And introducing any measure which increased burden to the riot would not be desirable at this point in time. I think the focus of the government should be looking at more investment in health, providing better services and more facilities. And I do think that to a certain extent, the government-led services is the most cost-effective way of providing healthcare services. But more need to be done to improve the services so that it meet the demand of the riot, that's one. And number two, I do believe that more needs to be done to restructure the healthcare services in the government service to make it more responsive to the needs of the riot. I think a lot of the planning was done at the central level, and it is not so responsive. And I have several ideas where I think hopefully I could share that what could be done to improve the services in the Ministry of Health.
YB, I think I tend to agree with Xiao-Ik that at the end of the day, you highlighted that the government grossly underinvested in health. You highlighted that it's 4% versus our country of economic status of equal stature. And then that is spending about 6-7%. But what the government doing now is just keep pouring money into catching up. So that itself perhaps needs to rethink of healthcare financing, needs to be revolutionized. So I think that's one of the things that I think, eventually we need to face that problem anyway. So by keep pouring money, we are just catching up with maintaining the old hospital, maintaining more consultant. Should we not think outside the wheel so that the money can be better spent? Do you have any ideas about that?
No, I think there are two approaches in this. One is you had so-called social health insurance where you had a professional team to handle the financing part of it. On this part, there are failures and there are successes depending on how well the finances are managed. Some of the country run into problem because at the end of the day, the amount of money saved in healthcare actually pays into the pocket of the managers. So at the end, it's still no net gain in having a social health insurance. So a lot depends on the management team. I think the financing part of it is we could actually stay with our current general taxation type of funding. Of course, we always face the competition for competing needs in the whole of the government ministries, from different ministries, welfare ministry, from education, for defense, for security and other ministry. That will always happen. But what I'm trying to say is, even with the general taxation, there are still ways where we can do things better. Okay. Number one, if you look at the organization structure of the ministry, it is very much a pyramid type of organization structure with leadership right at the top and then spread out to different division and then got down to different state level and district level. And there are too many layers of managers, one layer after another. And it makes decision-making slow. And it is not responsive to the needs of the riot on the ground. That's one. Number two, when there are many decision-making in the HQ, the adoption of technology is slow. There is a fixed process where they have to go through before they can adopt new changes, new technology. So I think one of the things which could be considered is actually a total rethinking of how the organization structure of the Ministry of Health to make it more flat. The management should be more flat and more autonomy given to the local state level or even district level. More decision means that they can be more responsive. It also means that the state level or the local level, they can be more accountable and they have more authority. Of course, at the same time, they assume more responsibility. I think in that way, I think we can see healthcare services which are more responsive to the riot. I think a flatter management team would be a better way. And of course, adoption of new technology. I can give you one example. There's a real case of parking problem in hospital Klang, HTA Klang. They have been talking about building a multi-story car park in Hospital Klang for more than 10 years. And the model was to have a public-private partnership, to have a private contractor to build the multi-story car park and collect parking fees to finance the project. And over the past 10 years, they have been talking, discussing with different government agencies in and out, in and out. For 10 years, not a single brick has been laid. Not a single car park can be built. And as a matter of fact, we can have new technology using a steel structure to build car park. And the whole car park can be up and running within 2 months at a much lower cost without a permanent structure and can provide the same amount of services to the riot. But because such thing has not been adopted before, So the whole government machinery is not able to adjust to the changes and adopt the new changes. There are many other things where we could improve, like medical records. If you were to computerize medical records, I think it would be a significant step towards a better healthcare services. If we adopt virtual consultation, which to a certain extent they have tried during the COVID era, and more widespread use of virtual consultation, certainly I think the services to the patients will be very much improved. But of course, one of the main important thing is a better human resource planning. I think things like, you know, the dilemma faced by contract doctors is something which should not have happened, you know, in this era. And then we have gone through 20 months of COVID, and we know that we have a dedicated team of doctors, nurses, and other healthcare personnel in the Ministry of Health. They are very dedicated, and these are valuable human resource. And we just need a proper guidance, proper leadership to make full use of them to provide best services for the people.
I would definitely get behind decentralization and, you know, less bureaucracy. I mean, even the example YBU used of hospital parking, which doesn't sound like it's related to healthcare, but it's actually a great example of people's experience with the healthcare system and their ability to access services. But let's go for a quick break now, and we'll continue our conversation on what happens behind the scenes in putting together allocations for healthcare allocations for the national budget. I'm joined today by my co-host, Dr. George Lee, as well as YB Dr. Lee Boon Chai, the MP for Goh Ping and the former Deputy Health Minister. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9.
Stay tuned to BFM's Budget 2022 special, brought to you by Ma Sing. This BFM Budget 2022 special is brought to you by Ma Sing.
Welcome back to Health and Living on the Bigger Picture. I'm T. Xiaoyik. Joining me on Zoom today for our Doctor in the House segment, my co-host, of course, consultant neurologist, Dr. George Lee. Also joining us, Dr. Lee Boon Chai, MP for Goh Ping and former Deputy Health Minister. Dr. Lee has been sharing insights with us into how a health budget is put together, or, you know, how the requests for health allocations in the budget are made, what it's like being in the room when the budget is announced. As George has put it, you know, it's like the Oscar Awards, and also how the wants and needs of the rakyat are translated into priorities for the Ministry of Health to put into the budget. And that brings us to look at the process of balancing priorities within, you know, it's a finite amount of the pie that you'll be getting. Perhaps, YB, you could help us to understand budget allocations in terms of operations and development, and then how does the Ministry of Health determine and advocate for what would their priorities be?
I think if you look at expenses, a big chunk of it is actually operational expenses. Only about 10% are so-called development expenses every year if you look at the budget. The development expenses are looking at new projects, new initiative, new facilities. And once this kicks on, then that's the plan you have for the next 1 year, or maybe up to 10 years with a 2-year rolling period. That's how the development projects are being planned. As far as the operational expenses are concerned, we mustn't take it as if operational expenses are waste, because operational expenses are essential for the continuing running of the Ministry of Health. And out of these operational expenses, about 60% of the expenses goes to salary and emolument, because Ministry of Health is basically a service-based ministry. So human resource is key. That's why I think emolument become a big chunk of the services. But the other big portion of the so-called operating expenses are drugs, vaccines, supplies, and those so-called disposables, and also, of course, the other operating expenses. So I think we cannot do away with operating expenses. We can look at new programs, new facilities in the development expenses for budget planning every year.
Typically, what is the proportion between the operations and the development expenses? And do you think that it needs to be rejigged?
Usually, about 90% of the expenses are operational expenses, and about 10% each year will be for operating expenses. Like, you know, in 2020 budget, I think about close to 30 billion for operating expenses and about 2-3 billion for development expenses. That's for new projects, new programs.
YB, we started the show with you describing that at the end of the allocation, then the Oscar is distributed, then you're preparing for next year's Oscar. Can you tell me who is we? I mean, who exactly? Because obviously, there are both sides of the divide. You get opposition, you get government, and then you get the civil servant trying to put forward their wish list or the begging bowls. For example, let's say the Klang parking lots, and then that obviously is wanting part of the pie. For example, the contract doctors wanting more part of the pie. How is that conveyed to the government so that that's allocated on the budget day?
First of all, I look at within Ministry of Health. Usually, of course, there are different divisions. So the different divisions will look at their wish list. And at the same time, the Ministry of Health also go down to every state. And every state will also list out their wish list, whether they want new clinic kesehatan, they want new hospitals, and so that that could be put in into the development expenses. So all the wish list will be compiled, and then at the end of the day, the HQ will draw out the wish list for Ministry of Health. And once the wish list for Ministry of Health is finalized, that will be presented to the Ministry of Finance. Of course, the Ministry of Finance will balance between the needs from Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education, and many other ministries and decide how the pie will be divided among different ministries. So I think, as I said, the moment this Oscar is awarded, we'll be preparing for next Oscar, because those wish lists which we did not get, we'll be preparing maybe for next Oscar. Hopefully we can get it. As far as the minister and deputy minister's roles are concerned, of course, they are the leaders of the ministry, and they should take a lead in deciding what should be prioritized. Because if you look at the wish list, there will be 1,001 things from different departments, from different states. But at the end of the day, it is the minister and deputy minister who decide which one should be given priority. And if the minister thinks that certain programs are priority, then those programs should be emphasized when presented to the Ministry of Finance and decided in the cabinet. I think take one example, like PECA B40 program was the brainchild of YB Dr. Sri Zulkifli, the minister before, and he presented and he fought for it, and we had allocation for that. The immunization, pneumococcal vaccination, that was also approved. And of course, we were in the process of doing electronic medical record before the Sheraton move, but that's all become history. So these are the things where we can see that the bureaucrats play their role, the minister, deputy minister can play leadership role to set the priority to be presented in the budget.
So within the Ministry of Health, you have the wish list from the different layers. But what about other stakeholders? And so right now, for Pakatan Harapan, as opposition lawmakers, what would be your role, as well as perhaps civil society organizations, right? Or industries who also want a piece of the pie for their interests. Do they have a say in it at all?
We do hope that everybody has a say. And we have not figured out how the budgeting process is going to be, but they are supposed to have engagement between the government MPs and the opposition MPs and Pakatan Harapan MPs before the budget is finalized. And we do hope that the civil society can also put in their suggestion so that some of the suggestion could be adopted in the budget. I take, for example, the pneumococcal vaccination program. It was very much a suggestion right from beginning from civil society, from some pediatric association and some medical association, and was adopted as part of the Pakatan Harapan manifesto and was implemented during Pakatan Harapan's time. So these are ways where civil society can play. Either they engage with the Pakatan Harapan MPs, or they can engage with the government, with the Ministry of Finance, and get issues carried through in the budget.
And speaking of manifestos, does it make a difference then if the ruling government doesn't have a manifesto to draw on?
I think it does make some significance. I think when we talk about manifesto, it is sort of a contract between the aspiring government and the rakyat. And we do hope that in future, the manifesto should be something practical, useful, and should be far-sighted enough and not just some short-sighted populist policies.
All right. Can we take a look, still on sort of trying to figure out, you know, how you prioritize what's important? I think one argument that has been made about previous budgets as well has been the lack of emphasis on sort of longer term investment. And the DG of Health himself recently said, what happened to us during the pandemic is a result of a lack of investment in public health. We have been facing an epidemic of non-communicable diseases due to a lack of emphasis on prevention and primary care in order to address NCDs. Do you think there needs to be a substantial increase in the budget in these areas?
Yeah, I do think that we need to have more expenses for public health. Not public health sector, it's public health. Instead of treatment, but more preventive care. But to be fair, I think to Ministry of Health in the past, not just in Pakatan Harapan's time, I think they've done fairly well. If you look at the network of Klinik Kesehatan, it is extensive and its coverage is practically everywhere. More than 95% of the population are covered by the Klinik Kesehatan. And the type of services they give, I would say commendable, very high quality services in terms of managing those NCDs, diabetes, hypertension, and other non-communicable diseases. The challenge will always be there, I think. But as what you have mentioned, you know, the COVID actually exposed despite what had been done, still relatively lack of investment in public health. A lot of the time, we still look at Ministry of Health as a ministry of treating diseases. We are not looking at Ministry of Health as a ministry of keeping you healthy. That's one of the things where I think Ministry of Health should also look at how they want to continue to provide services in the future. They should be giving more emphasis on keeping people healthy rather than building emphasis on treatment of diseases. That's what I'm trying to say.
Is there a role for budgeting to play in changing this mindset?
Certainly. I think there are two parts of it. If you look at public health, kesehatan awam, versus the hospital medical services, I think the expenses is always skewed towards medical services, the treatment in hospitals versus treatment for facilities in clinics kesehatan. Is in the ratio of about 2-1. That means for every dollar you spend, about 2/3 goes to hospitals, only 1/3 goes to the kesehatan awam or public health, preventive medicine. So I would think that proportion has to be slowly tilted to more balanced. That's one. Number two, we also find that the personnel for public health is relatively fewer compared to those in hospitals. We have twice the number of doctors and nurses and so on in the hospital setting then doctors and nurses in clinical kesehatan. I think that balance also got to be adjusted. Because when we look at COVID, take for example, lots of the COVID is not about treatment, about COVID. By the time you need treatment, you are late, you are too late. A lot about COVID is actually how to prevent people from getting COVID or how to prevent people from getting sick with COVID. And that should be the emphasis rather than building more and more facilities to treat COVID. So that's how we have experienced over the past 20 months or so. We keep on spending a lot of resources in treating COVID patients, but we didn't spend enough, didn't have enough people to do contact tracing, to advise on public health measures, to do testing, and to do all those preventive measures. That's where I think the emphasis was wrong.
YB, you mentioned from the very early on of the show that in Malaysia, 48% of the expenses actually come from private sector, and then 52% probably come from the government sector. In order to get the bigger investment, do you see that ratio actually expanding with the private sector spending more and then so people spending more out of the pocket? Or is that kind of inevitable that people do that anyway whenever the public sector is overwhelmed? So can you comment a little bit on that?
I think if you look at health sector and services, we should look at the total healthcare expenses. That should be the key point in terms of the total healthcare, whether it comes from private sector or come from government sector. If we allow the private sector to expand without control, certainly at the end of the day, the total healthcare expenses will escalate. So per capita, it will escalate. So the only way to check that is actually you must have a strong public sector to check the escalation of cost in private sector.
So is it a healthy distribution of 48 versus 52? The reason why I'm asking that question is that obviously, you know, the public health is being completely supported by taxation. And then on the other hand, a lot of people are paying out of pocket. And then, you know, are we maintaining that 48-52%? Is that a healthy distribution of resources?
I don't think that's a healthy distribution, even though I cannot tell you what would be the ideal situation. I think the ideal situation will depends on how patient, ordinary people perceive how they want to spend the money. But at the end of the day, I think the challenge to the Ministry of Health is to make government facilities as a first choice, facilities for healthcare, and so that people don't have to flock to private sector out of no choice. So for the same amount of treatment, they could get in government's facilities as good as private facilities. And they have a choice. If they want a more comfortable environment, they don't mind paying in private sector. That's up to them. I think the consumer has the right to choose. But at the end of the day, the government sector should make sure that at least a certain quality of care should be available for everybody, irrespective of the ability to pay.
And, you know, speaking of choice in the public health sector, interestingly, for Malaysia, we have an added layer, right? You have university hospitals as well. And George, you were previously with a university hospital. What were the challenges, you know, come budget time?
Well, I guess you have double dip. On one hand, you go for Ministry of Health, and then on the other hand, you go for Ministry of Higher Education. So indeed, it is challenging because on top of the actual healthcare provision, you also need to make sure that the training infrastructure is robust so that the next generation of the healthcare providers are also of certain quality. So indeed, in the teaching hospitals, you may have the double dip, but in my experience is that Ministry of Health tend to focus a lot of distribution to the Ministry of Health hospital and then just leave the Ministry of Higher Education to distribute whatever is necessary to the teaching hospital. Is that correct, YB?
I think there's some difference between when you see hospitals as well as compared to MOH hospital. I think UCL hospitals, apart from providing service, they also provide training, undergraduate and postgraduate training. And apart from that, R&D is an important aspect of the university hospital. Whereas for MOH hospital, the emphasis will still be service. Of course, they still provide some degree of training and also provide some degree of R&D. Apart from that, Ministry of Health also deal with regulatory role in the ministry. So they are slightly different role compared to Ministry of Health, hospitals and facilities as compared to Ministry of Education facilities.
I want to touch on accountability of the funds that are allocated and how they are invested and spent. And that's a big concern for the public, because we want to know at the end of the day, the taxes are paid by us. How do we ensure that what is allocated is spent and managed efficiently? Who do we hold accountable? How do we even find out whether the money has gone where it's supposed to go?
I think one of the ways, of course, we want to get the detail is actually through Parliament. Lots of information we can obtain during Parliament questioning. And of course, if you are ordinary riot on the ground, then you should actually look at the projects on the ground. If there is a clinic Sehatan to be built, and you make sure that it's built on time. If there is a hospital promised to be built, you also got to make sure that it's built on time at a cost which is not escalating. I give you an example. Sri Aman Hospital, that has been promised umpteen years and was supposed to be built in 2010, 2011, and until now is still not completed. And there were many hospitals like this. Another hospital in Burra, I think just completed this year at current Prime Minister's parliamentary constituency. And that is probably among the most expensive hospital in Malaysia because of changing hands, changing contractors along the way. So I think I've calculated when I was in the Ministry of Health, it costs about 4 million ringgit per bed for a so-called hospital in government hospital, which is almost twice as expensive as probably Subang Jaya Medical Center or Sunway Medical Center, I suppose.
So those are concrete projects that we can see and we can evaluate. The more intangible development expenditures would be harder for even lawmakers like yourself and the rakyat to really keep track of, wouldn't it?
Yeah, certainly. I think there are certain, like, you know, purchases of vaccines, purchases of drugs and supplies. Of course, they always had a so-called tender process. The tender board actually consists of Ministry of Health personnel and Ministry of Finance personnel. And there is a procedure. But I must say that all procedure can be rigged. So all procedure can be rigged. The only security is as good as a person who is sitting in the tender board themselves.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that any tender is rigged. Thank you.
YB, wow, wonderful of you to actually spill the beans about what happens behind the scenes for the Oscar nomination in as far as the budget is concerned. So let's come back to today, right? And obviously the budget is going to be announced, and then, you know, what's kind of like on most people's wish list, and then who are the usual disappointers?
I do hope that there should be more for healthcare. Certainly in the budget, I do hope that the continuing supply of COVID vaccine should be made available, because I think that will still be key for us to fight COVID. The war is not over. We have survived this current wave. I think the future wave looks inevitable, and continuing vaccination looks like a more tangible solution in order for us to keep the riot healthy and to allow the economy to function. I do hope that part of it, there will be appropriate allocation to fight COVID.
Do you see significant increment as far as the GDP is concerned? I mean, compared to last year, do you see a significant amount of proportion is going to be spent on healthcare? Clearly, it needs to. I mean, you were quoting 4%. What do you expect this year's allocation is going to be as far as GDP is concerned?
Now, I think I will probably look at the absolute amount. I do hope that it can be at least 40 billion for 2022, including both operational and development expenses. Earlier was about 32 billion. I was just hoping that it should be a substantial increase to catch up with the loss we had in fighting COVID. There will be a lot of catch-up demand to treat those NCDs, cancer treatment delayed, operation delayed. So there will be a lot of pent-up demand. So there should be additional expenses. But having said that, I do hope the ministry look at how to do things better, not just pouring more money. They should look at how to do things better, more efficiently. As I said, one of the things is flatter management, more autonomy, more empowerment of a state level. And number two, make use of technology, computerization, and more virtual consultation, electronic medical records, adoption of new technology so that the healthcare services can be more efficiently delivered, even with the same cost.
And do you have a final message for us, YB, in terms of the role of the rakyat to hold our government and our lawmakers accountable?
Now, I think the rakyat should always be more vocal about what they need. Of course, the politician will always say cost. You know, they always look at healthcare as expenses. As I said, for health, we should look at it as an investment. That's number one. And we cannot just look at cost alone, because well-being cannot be evaluated by dollar and cents. If you were to look at cost alone, I just quote you one example. And this is your real life. If you look at Minister, it was quoted before. But this is real life about cost benefits. Philip Morris, a tobacco company, actually commissioned a survey about effect of tobacco in Czechoslovakia before. And at the end of the day, they found out that the tobacco industry is actually positive for the public finance because it earned more revenue for the government. It actually gives taxes. And maybe, you know, some older people die earlier and consume less healthcare resources. And at the end of the day, they come up with a conclusion that it actually is positive for public finance. So that's not how we plan for health, because well-being cannot be evaluated by dollar and cent. We should look at expenses for health as an investment.
Absolutely. George?
Well, well said. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, budget is about money, but how do you actually value that money as far as life is concerned, as far as health is concerned? It's a really tricky way of evaluating it. But what it boils down to is that what I learned today is that the whole Oscar thing, although we see the gloria and the glam and everything of that distribution, behind the scenes, there's a lot of work behind it in order to make sure that whoever gets their awards, and more importantly, a lot of losers there, they don't get their distribution, sadly, sometimes might translate to a lot of sick people and a lot of people who die. So I think healthcare is a really sensitive issue. And then as far as money is concerned, and therefore, great work, YB. And also, you know, hopefully this year, the most people get what they want and less of casualty in literary sense.
Yeah, and on Monday, the work starts all over again for Budget 2023. And speaking of
Monday... And everyone needs to dress up again for the Oscar, right?
Speaking of Monday, tune in to Health and Living on Monday, the 1st of November. We'll be breaking down the health allocations from Budget 2022 and we'll be giving you the highlights and what it means to you. So that's on 1st of November at 4 p.m. Thank you so much, YB. Together with my co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, we've been speaking to YB Dr. Lee Boon Chye, MP for Gopeng and former Deputy Health Minister. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This BFM Budget 2022 special was brought to you by Ma Sing. Reinvent spaces. Enhance life.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.